From the National Catholic Register, this is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
The Diocese of Buffalo continues to be shaken by the sex abuse scandal and calls for its bishop, Richard Malone, to resign as shepherd. This week on Register Radio, we talk to Register correspondent Loretta Brown for the latest. Plus, Pope Francis finished his whirlwind trip to Southern Africa after delivering a message of hope, peace, and reconciliation. We get all the details from Edward Penton, Register Rome correspondent, who was on the papal plane. Hello, I'm Matthew Bunsen, senior editor with the National Catholic Register and co-host of Register Radio, filling in this week for Jeanette DeMello, our editor-in-chief, who is on a break. Well, this week there were new calls for the resignation of Bishop Richard Malone, the Bishop of Buffalo, in the face of even more scandals and new allegations of cover-up by the diocese in the sex abuse crisis and how the diocese has handled accusations of sexual misconduct. The overarching question right now is, will Bishop Malone fall under a document called Vos Estis Lux Mundi, Pope Francis's new decree on holding bishops accountable throughout the world? To talk about all of this, as well as an important story about Facebook and abortion, we're joined by Loretta Brown, who's a national correspondent for The Register. Hello, Loretta, and welcome back to Register Radio.
Hey, always happy to be here. Thanks.
So you probably didn't imagine as part of your beat that you were going to be having to cover things like Vos Estis Lux Mundi and abuse cases. So welcome to the national beat.
I've been learning a lot for sure about both of those things.
It's amazing how you can suddenly become sort of an immediate amateur canonist, right?
Yeah, I've been reading more canon law for sure than prior.
So bring us up to speed. This week there were some new developments in the Buffalo case, including a new whistleblower, and last week we were still grappling with the leaked interviews and conversations on the part of Bishop Malone. So is it possible for the situation to get much worse than it is right now?
You know, honestly, I was very taken aback by how much this is developing, because I had reported on the case, about last week. And even since then, there have been developments. And it's just, it's kind of a crazy situation. Lots of allegations of abuse, but mostly in this case, mishandling by Bishop Malone. And of course, as you mentioned, that scandalous leaked audio of him, you know, referring to one priest as a sick puppy, but then talking about how that might affect, you know, his own career and worrying about that and not so much, you know, directly addressing how that might affect
now,
the faithful. But
to get everybody up to speed, the case he's referring to was a seminarian who made allegations that he was a target of sexual misconduct by a priest in the diocese. And that was reported all the way back in November. But these recordings date to, what, March? So the appearance, at least, is that nothing had been done between them.
Right. And I was reading about this earlier. Apparently, he hadn't even removed the priest that was accused from ministry until the victim's mother pointed out, like, he's still in ministry. Like, what is the bishop doing? And the day after she pointed that out, I think in a interview, he did remove him from ministry for the purposes of an investigation. But I think it's probably just frustrating for those in Buffalo, because Vos Estis and this call for real reform and transparency have come about after the McCarrick scandal and a host of other scandals. And I think the faithful in Buffalo are probably looking at this and saying, well, okay, now we supposedly have guidelines. We have this new push to address these things. What's being done? And I kind of looked at that a little bit in the story I did about it. And I quoted Vos Estis on the handling of this sort of thing, because it does call for an investigation of, quote, actions or omissions intended to interfere with or avoid civil investigations or canonical investigations, whether administrative or penal, against a cleric or a religious in regard to, like, accusations of covering up sexual abuses, right? So
right. So
that's something that it's saying, no, like, that needs to be looked into by the Metropolitan.
So you're talking about the Metropolitan model, which is supposed to serve as the proper process and conduit for this investigation. So in this case, the Metropolitan for the province is Cardinal Timothy Dolan of New York. So his name has suddenly been all over New York media and beyond.
Exactly, right. And I did reach out to him actually the 23rd of August, and I was informed that he hadn't the Holy See hadn't asked him to take action in the case of Malone, and that he'd been in touch with the Holy See and with Malone in regards to it, but he hadn't been told to take action, which was kind of odd because the Metropolitan can tell the Holy See they're going to take action under this model. I think it was either yesterday or just a couple days ago his statement changed a little. I don't know if he would characterize it as that, but he told Catholic News Agency that he's been following the situation in Buffalo closely and is aware of his responsibilities under Vos Estes and has been consulting extensively with individuals in Buffalo, including Malone, clergy, laity. So we'll see. Oh, and it said that there was a hint in that statement to watch out for developments in the near future. So there's a possibility that he might request a sort of Vos Estes investigation, or the Holy See might initiate that. I don't know what he's been hearing, but that's kind of the latest on that. And I think, yeah, I think we'll see.
This comes this last week with a mounting number of calls for Bishop Malone to resign, not just from lay people, but from the priests of his own diocese. And correct me if I'm wrong, but Bishop Malone at one point said that he really wouldn't consider resignation because he's been receiving so much support from his priests. So is this moving him now into a much more difficult position?
Certainly. I think priests calling for their bishop to resign is, you've reached a pretty grave point in time with that, with a crisis and a scandal. And I did see his statement that he had such support, and it was kind of strange to me because I think ever since that 60 Minutes report with the whistleblower Siobhan O'Connor about him, you know, withholding names from a list of clergy accused of cover, I think ever since then I've just seen a lot of media reports indicating a lot of questions and anger from the laity in his diocese. So, I mean, yeah, we'll see what happens here. He's definitely, in his press conference, I think it was last week, he was definitely still holding on to that idea of, no, I still have support. I'm not considering resignation. So I don't.
So what does it say about the state of affairs in the Diocese of Buffalo that two of his own personal staff, we had his personal secretary, Siobhan O'Connor, and now his priest secretary, a priest by the name of Bionat, who himself has now made allegations that he at one point was abused as a seminarian, I believe. Is that right?
I think so, yeah.
Both of them releasing documents to the press, in the case of Father Bionat releasing these recordings that have really done incredible damage, I think, to Bishop Malone's, at least the public perception of him.
I mean, I think it's very telling, and I think it's not a good look for him at all. I think the diocese has taken a stance where they're doing damage control at this point with all of this, because you look at the allegations, you listen to the recording and read what he said, and it doesn't look good. Siobhan O'Connor had some very compelling, you know, evidence as well of cover up. So it's, yeah, I think Buffalo is, it's almost, and this is kind of why I looked at Buffalo in the story I'd written. I think it's one of the clearer instances of we see some things that really don't look right. So at least a very serious investigation needs to be conducted.
And this also comes exactly at the time when Vos Estes seems to have been activated for several other bishops around the United States.
Correct. Yeah, I saw yesterday, I think it was, there was a Vos Estes investigation into a Minnesota bishop, Michael Hopner. I'm not sure.
That's right. I think of Crookston. Right. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah.
Right. And then we have the allegations relating to the former bishop in Cheyenne that have been deemed credible. So this is a very difficult time for a lot of Catholics and the credibility of bishops at large, who I know coming out of their June meeting had hoped to put some of this at least behind them now that they had a structure.
Right. I think, and my story had mentioned, you know, other accusations against bishops and how those have been dealt with and how those might be dealt with now under Vos Estes, now that that's in place. And I think, while it could be looked at as a time of scandal for the church, particularly the bishops, I think there's an angle at which, like, the faithful might find this refreshing. Like, I think we do want to see real investigations taking place, and we want to see the names and allegations, you know, not to necessarily jump to judgment or do any of that, but just I think we were, like, people were very disheartened with the McCarrick scandal that so little had been known or so little had been done and the extent of cover-up. So I think this is an opportunity for the church to say, this is our model for looking at this, and now we see that in action. And so, I mean, we'll see how these investigations go. And but I think in some ways it might actually be encouraging for the faithful to actually see these Bozeman investigations starting to take place now.
Well, shifting gears in the time we have left, I wanted to ask you about another piece that you've just finished, and that's fact-checking Facebook that pro-life doctors say abortion is never medically necessary. Talk about that.
Yeah, so Facebook had flagged as false videos from a pro-life group, Live Action, that said abortion is never medically necessary to save the life of the mother. So it was an interesting story because I think it looked at like kind of what I call is like a philosophical and definitional divide, right? So if you actually watch these videos, the neonatologist and then the founder of Live Action, Lila Rose, they both explain what they mean by abortion, which is the direct intentional killing of a fetus, of an unborn baby. When they're saying abortion is never medically necessary, they're saying, yes, there are cases where a pregnancy needs to be ended for the safety of the mother. And in those cases, what a pro-life doctor does, they told me, other pro-life doctors I interviewed for the story told me, a pro-life doctor looks to end the pregnancy in order to treat the mother with the best possible outcome for the mother and the child. So if that means like late in the pregnancy, a mother's having a life-threatening condition, they'll deliver early. And yeah, maybe the 22-week, 24-week old child is not going to survive, but they aren't, you know, giving a shot of digoxin, I think is the what is used to kill the baby at that stage. But other, you know, they're not doing an abortion in the sense that they understand it, of the direct killing of the child. They're doing a treatment or an early delivery.
And the way that you quote the doctor here, there are also times when it may be necessary to give a pregnant mother medical treatments, which may tragically result in the loss of the baby. It is important to understand that these treatments are not abortions.
Right. And I think that's, well, not, you know, not to get too much into the philosophical, but it was interesting because I think this is an issue where you do need to kind of understand the intention and the effect of actions. And one of the doctors I talked to talked about, well, I think, like, because people are pro-abortion, they don't look at it in this way, but the intention is important. So a treatment to treat the mother, to heal the mother, the effect is sometimes that ends the life of the child, but the intention is not to end the life
right.
of the child.
And for people who want to read this, you can go to ncregister.com. Fact-checking Facebook, pro-life doctors say abortion is never medically necessary. Loretta Brown, always great to talk with you.
Thanks. Always great to be here.
Well, when we come back, I'm going to talk with Register correspondent Edward Penton on Pope Francis in Africa. This is Register Radio. More when we return.
There's nothing like EWTN's National Catholic Register. Revealing, engaging, inspiring. The most comprehensive news of the day from a Catholic perspective, with the moral authority that comes from being faithful to the teachings of the Catholic Church. And in the words of our founder, Monsignor Matthew Smith, a paper that will always be loyal to the Church and has no selfish axe to grind. Because the truth when the Register was founded in 1927 is still the truth today. The award-winning National Catholic Register helps readers engage the culture with confidence in the saving and sanctifying gospel of Jesus Christ. Get 6 free issues today by ordering online at ncregister.com/radio or call 800-421-3230 and mention code RADIO. That's 800-421-3230 and mention code RADIO. The National Catholic Register. Read faithfully.
And this is an EWTN Bookmark Brief. I'm Doug Keck. Just had the pleasure of speaking with Father Brian Milady, OP, about his latest book, The Decalogue Decoded, What You Never Learned About the Ten Commandments, proudly published by EWTN Publishing. Always great to see you,
nice
Father.
Nice to see you, Doug.
And this is based on a series you did for EWTN back in the 90s, right?
Yes, many years ago, the early 90s. It was before the Catechism came out in English. And what I was trying to do was reinstitute an examination of the objective sins against the commandments, and mostly to encourage people, when they examine their conscience for confession, to be able to identify the specific areas where they need healing, growth.
A new book by Father Brian Milady, available through our EWTN religious catalog. EWTNRC.com is the place you can get it right now. Look for the entire interview coming soon on the network. This has been an EWTN Bookmark Brief, and thank you so much for stopping by.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back to Register Radio. I'm Matthew Bunsen, flying solo this week with Jeanette DeMello out. And I think the appropriate word is flying, because Pope Francis flew to Africa in what was kind of a whirlwind trip to Mozambique, Madagascar, and Mauritius. He brought a message of hope, peace, and reconciliation. And along the way, he had some important things to say. And as usual, his in-flight press conferences raised a lot of eyebrows. And there's a great deal of interest in everything he says on the flights, especially back to Rome. Covering all of it on the papal plane, it was Edward Penton, the Vatican Rome correspondent for the National Catholic Register. First, Edward, welcome back. I hope you're not too tired after the papal trip.
Thanks, Matthew. No, but it was a very interesting trip. Quite exhausting, but quite fascinating, too.
It seemed that this was a papal trip of pretty remarkable contrasts. We had, on the one hand, the Pope visiting some of the poorest countries in Africa, especially Mozambique and Madagascar, and then he flew to Mauritius, which is one of the most prosperous. He had a similar message of peace and reconciliation, but slightly different messages as well in terms of economics and the environment, didn't he?
Yes, he did. I mean, those were the three big topics he raised on this trip, was the environment, poverty, and dealing with how to help the poor, and also dealing with the issue of peace and reconciliation, particularly in Mozambique, which went through a very bloody civil war, and is still sort of coming out of it, and its peace is very fragile there still. So those are the main issues. But yes, you're right. There was he kind of tailored his message, obviously, to each of the countries. But the sort of thread that ran through them was how to help the poor and how to really dealing with or shedding light on the plight of the people, particularly in the Mozambique and Madagascar, where they are very poor. I think something like they live on $2 a day in Madagascar. It really was a very poor country. I think it's the poorest country not suffering from conflict. So it was extremely poor there, but also Mozambique, where I think there's a high level of malnutrition and so forth. So it was very interesting in that regard. And also, I think the people there were extremely grateful for him to come. He got a huge reception, huge crowds. He got a million at the mass in Madagascar, and they were extremely happy that he paid a visit there.
Well, that trip to Madagascar, I know he focused in part on the environment, as he did in Mozambique. We're looking at issues like deforestation, and I know he used the phrase in the in-flight press conference we're going to come back to in a minute, of ideological colonization. What are some of the circumstances that he was referring to that pose those particular challenges to the people of Mozambique and Madagascar?
Yes, well, ideological colonization is what he refers to as it's where they have really the spreading of secular values, Western values, which are against the traditions in Africa, but particularly against the faith, especially regarding contraception, for example, and abortion. And these are being spread to Africa, often being sent there in exchange for aid from the West. So it's a sort of a colonization in that sense. And so he wanted to shed light on that. He didn't speak a whole lot about that. It was primarily about peace and reconciliation and how to strive for peace. You mentioned the fact that you have to keep striving for peace. You can't just sit back and expect it to last. You have to keep fighting for it. That's what the message he gave in Mozambique. But yes, that was certainly part of it. And he did mention it, of course, on the plane coming back.
And he made a rather memorable visit to the City of Friendship. There's a priest there I know who's something of a beloved figure in Madagascar, and that's Father Pedro Opeka, is that right?
That's right, yes. And I think many people felt that was the highlight because it was a wonderful witness that this priest has given. He's actually Argentine-Slovenian. His parents are Slovenian, but he was born in Argentina. And he went to Madagascar as a missionary in 1970. And in 1989, he set up this charity, really because he became so... He felt he couldn't be indifferent to any more to the poor in Madagascar, and he really wanted to make a difference. And what he did was he set up this charity where it doesn't just give handouts to the poor, but really gets them to build schools and houses, gives them jobs, and it's been hugely successful. I think there are 25,000 there and have jobs and have shelter. So, and he, as the reception he got when he entered, I think it was probably more than the Pope, ecstatic when he came. And it was incredible to watch because very moving because they just love him so much there. And it was a great witness and to show, you know, what missionaries do often out of sight, but the great work that they often do in countries like Africa where continents like Africa or countries in Africa where there's a great need to help the poor.
Well, and this is a case, too, of subsidiarity at work, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I mean, he very much has sort of done this on his own. I mean, he's had obviously the help of the church, but he's been very much independent in that sense. He's a Vincentian father, so he's a priest, so he's part of that order, but he is done this very much on his own, but with the help obviously of his order and other people around him, and the government too are very supportive of him, I think. So yes, a great witness and great work there, and really, as I say, I think it was a highlight for many of the people. Certainly those of us in the press corps were quite stunned by it and hadn't seen anything quite like it.
Well, the reception that Pope Francis received pretty much throughout the trip could be described as jubilant. One of the things that people sometimes don't appreciate, and this is something I know that you've been reporting on, is that for all of the many, many challenges in Africa, that this really is a kind of continent of hope.
Yes, it is. It is because the faith is growing so fast there. And there is, as I wrote in a piece last week, from my experience there, that there is a wonderful sense of joy that pervades the people there. It's come through suffering. It's come through poverty. But there is a sense of everybody believes there. Everybody has a sense of the transcendent. And that gives a great sense of life in parts of Africa, most of Africa, I'd say. It's a big continent. There's a lot of variations, of course, but I think generally that's the sort of hallmark of Africa, and that you could see that in spades when the Pope came there. I mean, the sense of joy, the jubilation, the joyful ceremonies and masses and everything was just was great to see. And so I think you can see there why the faith is growing so fast. I think it grew something like over 6 million between 2016 and 2018. There's 6 million growth in the Catholics in Africa. So it's growing very fast indeed.
Well, no papal trip would be complete without some sort of a controversy relating to his in-flight press conferences. Flying to Africa, there was the whole kerfuffle over saying that it is an honor to be attacked by Americans. And then flying back, the question was asked for some additional clarification. What did he have to say exactly?
Yes, well, he says that he always welcomes criticism, but it has to be constructive criticism. He says he doesn't like it when people criticize him. They smile at his face and then stab him in the back. Of course, nobody likes that. But I think he also said that he kind of put the criticism and placed it on what he called closed groups and people who are rigid, sort of Pelagian. They place a sort of sterile morality, as he put it, over the will of the people of God. And he doesn't like that. He spoke a lot about the people of God, which he often has in the past, and the importance he believes of listening to them And so that was how he kind of explained it. He was asked also about whether he's afraid of schism. And he said that he isn't afraid of schism or schism, but he is praying that it won't happen. And so that was an interesting comment as well. He says that obviously he doesn't want it to happen. He says it affects the spiritual health of many people. And but he did sort of say, you know, if people want to go, then they're free to go. It's the freedom that the Lord gives us. As I say, he's praying it won't happen. But he also says, you know, the criticism he recognized doesn't just come from America. It comes from all kinds of all different places, including parts of the Curia. So he's well aware of the criticism that there is out there of the direction of his pontificate. And he also says, you know, he's open to dialogue, but it has to be, I think he said it's a sort of dialogue which, not necessarily on his terms, but I think he doesn't like it when the criticism comes at him and he thinks that it comes from a sort of closed quarter. He only wants to have dialogue with those who are open to it. At least that's how he put it.
Right. And he used the other image of throwing stones and then hiding your hand.
That's right.
So I think we'll be hearing quite a bit more about all of this, and the person who will be documenting it for Register readers will be you, Edward Penton. So thanks so much for your coverage and for everything else that you do for EWTN News.
Thank you, Matthew.
Well, my thanks to Loretta Brown and to Edward Penton for their work for the National Catholic Register and for EWTN News. That's it for this week on Register Radio. Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Remember also to listen to our podcast. Thanks again so much for joining me here on Register Radio. On behalf of Jeanette DeMello and our producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Matthew Bunsen. Until next week, take care and God bless.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.